The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's just approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 7th of May, 2026. How are you all keeping? We're doing good here. Nice atmosphere around the building today as we gear up for another Greg Hughes Show up until 11 o'clock. Lots coming up. We want your calls, your comments, your requests, in fact, indeed, if you wish, to our usual numbers, which I'll remind you of. And as I said before on this programme, you don't have to regularly text a radio show to get involved with your local radio show. Just take out your phone. Your views, your opinions, your requests are all equally important to us here. 086 60 25,000, so that's good for SMSs and WhatsApps. You can give us a call here, 07491 25,000, or if you prefer to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com, and we pick up your emails and your texts too if you listen to the podcast on our website or Spotify or iTunes, or indeed the overnight rerun of the show. Great to have you on board. Right, let's have a look at the papers for this Thursday. Always busy on a Thursday, you know that, don't you? Let's see what the Tyrconnell Tribune is leading with. Fiala Molloy, president of the INHFA, has said that he has serious reservations about the final report of the Advisory Committee on Nature Restoration because the proposed funding mechanism is not workable. The final report was published this week, and the INHFA concerns increased with the advisory committee finding, insisting that funding for the programme must be additional to CAP. However, the farm lobby is sceptical about the proposal. They have claimed that the 2025 National Development Plan review was raided from the dedicated infrastructure, climate and nature fund to bolster Metrolink transport, water and energy infrastructure. The Donegal News this morning, an abusive spouse is in prison, but has continued to terrorise his former partner by sending her bullets in the post despite being behind bars. The shocking harassment was revealed this week as domestic violence survivors and women's support groups claimed abuse in Donegal is off the scale. They've warned that a woman could die unless domestic violence services get more funding to help scores of at-risk women. They've been left on the brink of suicide due to male abusers, with one terrified woman threatened at gunpoint, it is claimed. Donegal Domestic Violence Services warned the level of violence in Donegal is just off the Richter scale and harrowing. Donegal Uplift Project warned women are on the brink of suicide due to abuse. That's a stark story, important story that as well. But my things seem to be getting worse rather than improving. The Derry News is out this morning. Attacks on the Fountain estate have been condemned. Police have responded to reports of disorder in the Naylor's Row and Fountain area of the city on Monday and Tuesday night. A 13-year-old boy was arrested on Tuesday evening on suspicion of riotous behaviour and released on bail to allow for further police inquiries. A number of individuals believed to be youths and some masked men were involved in the antisocial behaviour. Do you live in that area? Do you want to talk about it? Get in touch with us. This is a story covered in the Irish Daily Mail that for different reasons, I would have been suspicious of, and I'd mentioned it maybe off air, certainly off air, perhaps on air as well, was the concern that there were adult migrants being treated as children in the care system. But of course, unless you have the actual facts, you can believe something to be true. But unless you have the actual facts, it's irresponsible perhaps to talk, you know, broadly, publicly about it. But there are facts that show it has happened quite a lot. Up to 181 adult migrants spent an average of 2 months living among children in Tuusula care after falsely presenting as minors to immigration officials. Tuusula has told the Dáil's Public Account Committee that some adults spent 57.6 days on average in its care before they were found to be ineligible last year. During the same year, up to 181 adults were under the care of the Child and Family Agency, but later applied for asylum as an adult. The length of time adults spent living amongst minors is the latest revelation in a list of scandals associated with the Service for Migrant Children. The PAC was previously told that through Tuusula access, the PAC was previously told that though Tuusula assessed the age of unaccompanied minors seeking international protection, there are no legal obligations on the agency to do so, which is crazy, right? Tusla's chief executive, Kate Duggan, told the Public Accounts Committee last year that this task had placed significant pressure on its staff members. Now, I mean, there are many reasons why someone coming into this country at this point, maybe they have no documentation with them at all, might declare to be minors, potentially even just because of the benefits that might be available compared to if you declared as an adult. But as I say, there's been some obvious cases that I've seen whereby, you know, someone's been presented as a 17-year-old with very advanced male pattern baldness, a moustache and a face that's clearly aged in well into its 20s. So there has to be some better way of determining that you aren't putting fully grown people who you know nothing about. And that would be the same of wherever people have come from, even if it was internally from within the country. Don't get me wrong, this is not profiling, but putting those people in amongst children, it's happened quite a lot. 181 adult migrants. On to the Irish Times this morning, and I was wondering yesterday morning. I was wondering yesterday morning how long it would take for Donald Trump to realise that him opening this safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, how long it would take him to realise that it simply was impossible or that no one would actually use it. And I think by the time I'd come off air, they had suspended this notion. So how did they? I mean, I'm in Egypt from the northwest of Ireland. I could see it was unworkable. How did an entire administration announce it and hail it and then within hours have to scrap it because it was obviously unworkable? But anyway, there might be some progress in the Middle East, though we've been on the brink of that before. Iran has said it is reviewing a new US proposal to end the war in the Gulf. Sources said Washington and Tehran were closing in on a one-page memorandum while leaving tricky issues such as Iran's nuclear program for later. I was going to sort of start commenting about the reason that Israel and the US launched this war, and it was all about, you know, their nuclear enrichment and all that kind of stuff. But it seems, and now trying to get this strait opened, which only closed because the war started, and now there's not actually going to be an agreement. There's just going to be a memorandum of understanding. But do you know what? If that stops all this, I'll take it. Iranian foreign minister spokesperson said his government would convey its views to Pakistan mediators, even as US President Donald Trump renewed threats against Iran. But then one of his key spokespeople said the war part of their offence in the Middle East has ended. On to the Irish Independent. I think Gooch might have mentioned this a little earlier on. It's perhaps the most annoying sight when nipping down to the hotel pool, row after row of sun loungers reserved with towels and not a single one left to lie on. I don't understand this. I don't know why people do it. They get up the crack of dawn to put towels out, and often, and I noticed we were lucky enough to get away for a few days towards the end of last month, and people don't even sit in them. They reserve them in case they might want them at some point during the day. And the hotel we were staying in had apparently a strict no sunbed reservation policy, but still every single bed had a towel on it. Do we do that on our holidays? I suppose, you know, you can't judge an entire nation per se. But would we be inclined to do that? Do you do that when you're on holidays? Is it one of the first things that there's a role within the family that someone has to go down and put the towels down? I suppose, listen, you have to compete, don't you? Or you don't get your bed if others are doing it. But in Germany, the country most associated with the tyranny of the towel. Now, I would suggest that it's the British that have tried to label the Germans as the most associated. But anyway, one holidaymaker took matters into his own hands. And this week, a German tourist won a payout of more than €900 after he said his tour operator, after he sued his tour operator for allowing guests to reserve their sun loungers with towels. So hopefully some of you out there are lucky enough to get away over the next couple of months. And maybe you can sue people if they take your lounger. The Irish Farmers Journal: changes to the flat rate VAT scheme are costing non-VAT registered farmers around 4 million at mart sales this year. The Irish Cooperative Organisation Society has said since the 1st of January, the flat rate VAT top-up reduced from 5.1% to 4.3%. VAT on livestock sales remains at 4.8%, resulting in a 0.3% differential. As a result, non-VAT registered farmers who sell to other non-VAT registered farmers in March are being deducted €2.80 per €1,000 of livestock sold, Rail Doyle of the ICO says. Said, my eyes are tired today, I'll be honest with you. So we've only got two papers to go. Ryanair and Michael O'Leary, and I'm doing perhaps what he wants us to do here. Airport should be banned from serving alcohol to passengers from early morning flights, Ryanair boss Michael O'Leary has said. Now, Michael O'Leary, I think, drags this story up and a few others every time they want to give sales a lift. You know what I mean? I think they are the masters of generating publicity. Ryanair sell booze on their planes. You can book the booze on their planes before you even get on the blooming planes. And he's starting to talk about, well, airports shouldn't be selling drink for early morning flights. Now, no one should be getting on a flight loaded, I don't think. It's disruptive to other passengers, etc. If people choose to have a drink in the airport, surely they're entitled to do that, are they? Especially if the airline calling for it serves booze themselves in the early morning. But anyway, I just believe this is a big PR stunt, and now we're part of that because I'm reading it out. He thinks the measure would reduce the number of people who are disruptive on board planes. Mr. O'Leary said Ryanair was being forced to divert an average of nearly one flight every day because of bad behaviour, up from one a week a decade ago. Now, in fairness, he is backing this up with statistics, and that is quite disruptive to an awful lot of people, and surely you should be able to hold off till later in the day for a drink. So there's mixed, I don't know if there's mixed arguments in relation to this. He said it's becoming a real challenge for airlines. I fail to understand why anybody in airport bars is serving people at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. I mean, the solution to this is not allow them on the planes, but maybe that's easier said than done. And the state's wage bill going up, and is putting pressure. So you'll hear a lot of talk about, you know, overspending departments, health, children, education. And it's not because they're spending necessarily a fortune on services, though some of this will be accounted for in services. A lot of it's down to wages. Spending on wages by the government is up 9.3% so far this year. The mega state, pay bill, more than the 6.3% increase forecast in the budget is revealed in new Exchequer returns. And the reason this is problematic is me and you also being told that we can't spend, that we have to be, you know, that the state has to watch its spending because it can't spend money based on, you know, corporation tax income. Now, the corporation tax income will end up covering these increases, but pay increases are locked in. You know, you don't roll back on them all of a sudden. So it is problematic because if, and we've been talking about this for a long time, if we lose that corporation tax, we are going to have bills that are going to have to be paid that aren't necessarily roads and infrastructure and housing and all that manner of thing. It's going to be wages. Right, okay. That was a run through some of the papers. Don't forget to watch the show if it suits you. We stream it live every single morning. We're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. So watch us on your Fire Stick, your smart TV if you're at home or work in the home. And you can also watch that on your mobile devices. And we're across our Facebook pages. You just type in Highland Radio. One of them will pop up and you can watch it there as well. Handy if you are hard of hearing as well too, or if someone of your life is and they want to keep up with what's happening across the Northwest, because subtitles are generated. So it's a great way for people maybe who are hearing impaired to be able to stay up to date with what's happening, not just here in this region, because we keep you up to date with what's happening right around the country and beyond. Social media platform Meta has been called on to build safer products and systems and to engage with Commissioner Mann in its investigation into its practices. The regulator announced it's investigating Meta platforms, which include Instagram and Facebook, to determine whether they've breached provisions of the Digital Services Act by failing to provide information and transparent options regarding content recommender feeds. Nolene Blackwell is the online safety coordinator with the Children's Rights Alliance, I beg your pardon, and joins us now. Good morning to you, Nolene.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you on the programme. Right.
Thank you.
Obviously, this is something, is it, that you believe that we really need to get all social media companies around the table on?
So all of these companies are separate companies, you know, so getting them around the table would be the ideal solution. Getting them around the table with a view to all of them agreeing that they really want safe products, and particularly safe products for children, would be great. But actually, this is more a matter of law now. Under the law, you mentioned the Digital Services Act there. Under that law, Meta and each other company in their own individual way is required to have a system whereby somebody can say in their preferences when they go onto the platform that they don't want to get more information based on the profile that Meta have of them. So every time you go onto any social media platform, indeed any platform, the company that runs the platform gathers information about you and makes a profile of you, makes a decision about what age you are, what you like, what ads they can sell you in particular. So the law says that you should be able easily to turn that off, so that if they're recommending stuff to you, if they're pushing more information at you, that's not based on your profile. And what the regulator has identified in this case is at least a concern that the Meta platforms don't do that. And that's what they're investigating now. They haven't come to a decision, but they've based it on what they've looked at because they supervise the platforms regularly. And they say they've also based it on complaints they've got, that it's hard for people to actually turn off that profiling for stuff that's recommended to them.
But social media companies have been found liable in the courts. I think it's only earlier this year that jurors in a case in the United States, a landmark case, found that Meta and Google, which owns YouTube, intentionally built addictive social media platforms going on to harm a 20-year-old's health. And they're going to appeal that, but there is this sense that this could open the floodgates and could be like, you know, something that might change social media forever. We'll have to wait and see. But it seems that these companies are so big, so well financially resourced, right, that they can fight these battles for years and years and years on end, be it court cases taken against them or whether it's the EU fines or whatever Dublin might be trying to do. They seem to be so big that this is almost probably factored into their business model.
You know what, you're right. And that's why we have to say they have an obligation in law to do certain things. But if they're not going to do it, it is going to be slow. And in truth, I think we have all been asleep to the size of them, or we've been so enchanted by all the good things that the digital world brings us, that we haven't until very recently even worked out a system whereby they can be held accountable in law. And then like any big company, any of the big companies, and these are the biggest companies, richest companies in the world, they have it, I'm sure, factored into their model. And when eventually it's to account and they have to do it, they will do it and they'll find some other way of making money. In the meantime, they're continuing to make a lot of money, which is why we say, look, they have the law. They should be obeying the law. Mm-hmm. They're big enough to do it. They say they're doing nothing wrong. But like, as you say, those US companies, and it wasn't only Meta and Google, TikTok and Snapchat had settled with the plaintiff in advance. So they had effectively fessed up, they'd owned up to the fact that there were addictive patterns happening. So it's a mixture. What we all should be doing is keeping a really close focus on these companies and requiring them to do better. And we also then, I think, have to say to our own policymakers, our own politicians, the people who make decisions, okay, we want the investment of, we want the digital investment in Ireland. It gives us jobs. It pays the taxes they pay go to manage all our other systems. But at the same time, we have to really strengthen the voices of those who say, sometimes, if these companies are doing harm, then actually, you know, we shouldn't be supporting them.
Yeah, but unfortunately and quite cleverly, this whole conversation has been hitched to the wagon of free speech, freedom of expression, and it just gets tied up and wrapped up in almost like a culture war, and we never progress.
Yeah, but I think actually we are starting to progress. There is that unease now, I'd say. I'd say most of your listeners would have that sense of unease about the way that they can be manipulated online. Everyone wants to stay online. Everyone wants to have those rights of free expression. They want the rights of privacy. But I think more and more we're recognising that terrible harm can be done as well, particularly to, for instance, children, which is why there's a special provision by the regulator for children. Children should not be able to access harmful or illegal material. And so we have this looking at recommender systems. Last week, the EU Commission, which is all the regulators kind of working together, was also looking at how easy it was for under 13s to get onto Meta, which is in breach of Meta's own rules. And undoubtedly, they could do better. They could have stronger systems in place, which is why we say, look, you know, you have to obey the law, but wouldn't you do the right thing as well? Wouldn't you do the right thing by people and by children? People will still want their social media. They'll still want their digital age. We're not going back from that. But, you know, there is an obligation on companies as well to act responsibly.
Yeah, the thing, though, I disagree with you a little bit very respectfully, because social media is, and the content creators are incentivized by how long they get people to watch stuff. That literally is the basis of how you get paid. And whilst that is the content creators, how that's monetized, and they're making this stuff and the algorithms are pointing people to this stuff, it's the entire business model of the thing. Which concerns me. And another concern I have as well is that go ahead, Nolene.
Do you know what? You are right, but they could have a safer business model, and they know how to do it. But particularly in those US cases, a lot of the evidence came from insiders who understood how they were able to manipulate for monetary purposes. So they do know how to restrict that as well. And I think the job of the regulator, a regulator is never going to be fast off the ground. That's not the way they do it. But through law and regulation, and then I think through society choices as well. You know, for instance, in Ireland, we don't have any proper complaint system. If you have a complaint about social media, you really have to complain to the company that's producing the social media. There's no independent adjudicator out there yet. There is provision in our law. We could put one in, but we haven't done it yet. So I think it will take the regulator time. It will also take individual complaints, and it will take us working on the realization that these companies are not neutral. The law has supported over 20 years. The law has supported these platforms. They're seen as neutral. They kind of say, nothing to see here. It's not our business if users put up stuff. It is their business right now. As you say, they set the algorithms. They set the recommender systems. And that's what this particular complaint is about. This is about how they are making it hard for people to just see what they want to see. And that is frankly illegal.
And finally, I do have my concerns that we're always so many steps behind. And I think to some extent as important to this conversation is it's almost probably a welcome distraction for these companies, because they are pivoting to artificial intelligence. And the way artificial intelligence it will integrate with young people into the future and adults is going to be far more complex and far more intrusive, to the point whereby you know, artificial intelligence will actually be taking actions on behalf of people and speaking to them and become an incredibly trusted voice. And I don't think we're doing anything yet, even as this technology progresses, to say, well, how are we going to protect children there? Because these companies aren't investing multiple billions of euro in Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. All of their money is going in to AI. And I just feel that we're 5 or 6 years late on this conversation, and we're going to be 5 or 6 years late when this AI truly becomes a native technology and integrated into our young people's lives. And I really don't think we'll get that genie back in the bottle.
100%. And the absolutely scary thing right now is that right now, this year, in Brussels, the European institutions, Parliament, Commission, and Council, are all working to so-called simplify the law that hasn't even come in. It's only barely come in relation to AI. The law was already very weak. It didn't even deal with things that really affect children, harm children. It didn't deal with those. It didn't deal with things like deep fakes. It wouldn't have dealt with Grok. It doesn't deal with them yet. And right now, we are simplifying it because the industry is saying there's too much regulation, it's too complex. They have a point that there can be duplication. We all know that in other areas, in agriculture, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're dealing with EU things, it can be very bureaucratic. But at the moment, there is no effective law and no effective protection for the rights of people in relation to AI. If you can do something about it through Highland, there is a huge need for effective regulation. We talk a lot in Ireland about innovation, how we want to be up there with the innovators. We should only be innovating in the context of ensuring safety for the users of AI. And you're right, we're not there yet by a long shot. We're not even trying that hard.
No, we're not in the game yet. All right, listen, Noeline, thank you as always. A pleasure to have you on this programme.
Thank you, Greg. A pleasure to talk to you. Best of luck. Bye-bye.
Noeline Blackwell, Online Safety Coordinator with the Children's Rights Alliance. Welcome on to the programme now, Trinda. Thank you very much for your time, Trinda.
Thank you for having me.
Right, we're talking about the public service obligation contract. This for the route between Donegal Airport and Dublin, of course. Big, huge public campaign to get it more suited to the needs of the region. Thankfully, that was a successful campaign. But you say there are some anomalies that you believe are in relation to the service versus the PSO.
Yeah, that's correct. In the last couple of weeks especially, and I'm not sure if we were between kind of deadlines and starts of the new contracts, but we've noticed, and I know that I'm not the only person that noticed, that the prices of tickets are actually over the 43 euro mark that is stipulated in the PSO. And there's also a certain aspect of reliability. We had, it was Tuesday, the flight came in late from Dublin in the day before on Monday, I guess, and the crew actually timed out. So our flight leaving in the morning got delayed by an hour and a half, which the whole point of the PSO stipulating that the plane remains in Donegal is because it has to be able to leave in the morning on time. So if you're sending crew that are going to time out, it kind of defeats the whole purpose of having the plane here overnight. So there's some kind of edge cases that don't seem to be thought out quite as well on the carrier side almost, if that makes sense.
Just in relation to, say, for instance, when you booked the ticket that was over 70 euro, how far in advance of the flight did you book the ticket?
I booked it on the weekend. I usually book them on the weekend because then I'll know, by Friday, I know when I'm expected in office. So yeah. I usually tend to book them on the weekend. And I go in Tuesdays, Wednesdays. So it was 2 days, 3 days in advance. And then I also noticed that because they've added the noon route, the noon flight back in, I accidentally booked the noon flight instead of the evening flight coming back. And there was no way to change it without getting 40 euro charged again. Wow. And I actually overheard one lady who was down in Dublin for a medical treatment. She had done the same thing, and it was actually cheaper to buy just a brand new ticket one way than to change the ticket and be charged that 40 euros.
Yeah, I've looked through the PSO in the past, and this is, pardon my ignorance in relation to this trend, I didn't see a stipulation, a ceiling on the price of tickets, more a guidance that they should be, you know, they should be affordable.
Well, see, and I've been talking with the Cancer Society folks as well, and I was under the impression that it was 43 euros is what I've been hearing, and I've been looking through it as well. And there is guidance for it, but we're all under the impression that there's a 43 euro kind of cap in terms of what it should be. Mm. It definitely shouldn't be 70 euros each way. Yeah. I can say that much.
So you're finding recently a round trip, 140 euro, sort of, if you book it on the Friday or the Saturday for the Tuesday or the Wednesday.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that was what I found, yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, we'll have a look into it. Just a response from the airline. Emerald Airlines, exclusive operator of Aer Lingus Regional, complies with all contractual requirements of the Donegal Dublin PSO. That comes in from Sarah from Emerald Airlines. But, I mean, obviously, we're not suggesting that they're breaching it, but we need to ascertain, you know, what is the ceiling? Is there a ceiling? And you know, in what way or when can they increase it above that? So we'll check into all that, trend. It's interesting observations. And what it does is it throws the story out to the wider public as well. And we'll see what they have to say. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. Thank you, Trinda. And staying in the air, drinking on flights. I love how Michael O'Leary is calling for better regulations on flights, yet this is the same man selling unlimited amounts of alcohol on his flights. There is an irony there, isn't there? Another, alcohol sales are a massive profit bonus for airlines, especially for low-cost carriers and in businesses like Ryanair. Another, charge the person responsible for the flight diversions in a few of those and it will soon stop. You would think it would, wouldn't you? But do you know what? I don't know if it would, because if you're the type that, you know, is going to get completely loaded at the airport and jump on a flight and cause aggro to the point where the flight is diverted, are you really going to be too worried about it? Right, I want to say a quick hello to our sports editor here, Oisin Kelly. Hi, Oisin. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, good morning, Greg.
And I just wanted to get the latest from you in relation to this speculation, and it's going to cause problems for a lot of people. We were, as you know, it seemed obvious it was going to happen because that's how life works, drawn against Kerry in the first round of this new format, All-Ireland. The game, it seems likely that it's now going to be on GAA+. They've expressed a preference to that game. RTE wanted it as well. But the working theory at this point is that the glamour tie is actually going to be on pay-per-view and people won't be able to watch it at home.
There's nothing official, Greg, at the moment. But what we do know, going by, I suppose, reports over the last 24 hours or so, is that it seems to be GAA+ is leading the way to get the game. And apparently they have been told that they will be having that game, plus they'll also get the Cork game as well in round one. They're actually going to show three of the games that weekend, and RTE then are going to have the fourth game, which possibly could be the Roscommon-Tyrone match. But anyway, the big game from our point of view is Donegal-Kerry, and indications are that that game will be on the subscription GAA+ service. So it will. So the national broadcaster is not going to get it. It's not going to be on your TV on terrestrial free of charge. If you want to see it, you're going to have to pay for it. And maybe this is the route now that the GAA, they've tried to go down over the last couple of years, and now maybe they've changed the structure of the championship. As has there been a change there as well to include this going forward? That maybe the end game is in a number of years' time, is everything going to be on the GAA's subscription service? You're going to be behind a paywall for all their big matches. But it seems to be that Kerry and Donegal is going to be on GAA+, unless there's a dramatic U-turn over the next couple of days. And it's going to be the Saturday the 23rd. What time that game's going to be? 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 or 7? The thing about GAA+ is they can go anytime they want. RTE are sort of stuck to a 5 and a 7 on a Saturday. So is it going to be an earlier game? We have to wait and see. We'll see where it's going to be.
GAA
but it is
Plus
the
now is wholly owned by the GEA. So yeah. This is the association itself picking its favourite game to put on.
And they
on.
Have that as well in round two. They've got the pick of round two as well. RTE's not going to be happy with this.
No, but is this part of it, though? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, if the counties where it's your game, you're going to be peed off, right? Mm-hmm. But is this what GEA Plus has to do to make so many games available for us to watch? I mean, we can watch more GEA now than we ever did, right?
Yep.
RTE don't have the channels or the platform or the money to show all of these games. Is this just something we're going to have to live with? You know, I mean, obviously, it is something we're going to have to live with.
Well, if you use the American football format, okay, so as we know, streaming and subscription is huge in America. But what they do each and every weekend is they pick certain games that go to certain broadcasters, be it the CBS or the Fox or whoever has it, and then the rest of them are all behind the paywall. So if you are a fan of American football and you want to watch games in America that aren't be shown on the television, you've signed up to the NFL service and you're able to watch whatever amount of games. So that's the sort of route possibly that the GAA is going down. It seems to be that is the direction. Now, they do need tie-ins with national broadcasters. So
no,
they do.
Of course they do.
Obviously, that needs to be there. But if it's going to be at a stage where, like, the national broadcasters are going to get big games, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, we know that. But
no, I get that. The thing that doesn't rest easy with me, or does rest, I don't know, right? So GAA Plus is owned by the Gaelic Athletic Association. So are they picking that game because it is the best game, no doubt about that? But also, are they looking at maybe how many subscriptions or how
revenue
many...
Revenue streams. It's all about revenue at the end of the day.
This is the association sort of exploiting the demand of its members and supporters for generations. Like, that's commerce, I get it, but it doesn't feel like that.
You have to weigh it up, okay? You have to weigh it. They're trying to give as many games as possible and show as many games as possible as they can. This is the option for them. But at the same time, you have to understand they have to pay for this as well.
Yeah.
And in round one of the All-Ireland Series, you're not going to get much bigger than Kerry and Donegal. So where's the biggest revenue going to come? And they see this as an opportunity for themselves now that possibly this here now we can make a lot of revenue off this, a lot of money that goes towards paying for this area. Because it's a fantastic production that they do. Like, I've watched it myself.
No, in fairness,
so I have.
Yeah,
in fairness, there's a lot of big names in it. The production of it is excellent. So it is, and they have to pay for it. So they're trying to find, you would think, a happy, right, we have to show as many games as possible. We always have to pay for this as well. They're in a stage in the championship where they've got a couple of big games under their belt now, and they can take a handle of these. RTE, obviously, down the line, will have some huge games as well.
Of course, it's about accessing
it. What they don't want to do either is fracture a relationship with RTE over this.
No, they don't. But also, you know, it's about access. There's lots of people listening to this program that, you know, might not have the ability to get the app running up up and running, or they might have the strength of the broadband, or, you know, the technical wherewithal to actually sign up, or sign up for one game, or sign up for a season pass. You know, it just feels too soon, and there's no alternative that makes the sport inclusive for everyone, especially those who were standing on the sidelines holding flags or doing whatever they were doing 40 years ago. And that's what pees me off about it.
It annoys me too, but I don't get much of a chance to sit down and watch Donegal games, either behind a paywall or on national TV. It's a case of it is what it is. We know that this has been coming for the last number of years because there has been the GAA Go, and now it's GAA Plus, and this is the route that they're going down, and it doesn't suit everybody. So it doesn't.
No,
it doesn't suit it. So particularly the older generation who aren't in any way tech savvy, or as you say, don't have the broadband, the facilities where they're living. Is not accessible.
It's about a just transition for me. Yeah. It's like, okay, do that.
Yeah. I'm sure the GAA have sort of weighed up, right, what is the knockback of this going to be for a certain element of supporter?
Mm.
Like, there may be that as well. But they've decided to do it, and it seems to be. It's going to GAA Plus. We aren't going to change it, so we're not, but we just have to move forward with it.
Yeah,
and obviously, if you can't get GAA Plus and you're wondering where you can get coverage of it, we'll have it live here on Highland Radio.
Yeah, of course, and that is the fantastic option. It's a great way of consuming as well. Briefly, This Down team, right, were being lauded as they had a plan. This was the next team with a plan, had been working on this. The manager knew all along that they had the beating of Donegal. The players eventually, halfway through the first half, realised, yes, you were right, we have the beating of Donegal. Yeah.
And there was other factors in that too. Donegal were so flat that day.
Yeah, but
that's the other element of it.
That's going to form part of your answer.
Yeah.
But then they go up, right, after that, and they play Armagh and are blown away.
Yeah.
What happened in that first game?
Donegal just didn't step up.
Why?
I don't know why. Like, there's no doubt they would have done all the preparation. I'm not the one. The management have to figure out why it happened. So they do. We just were nowhere near the pitch of the game at all. And when you add in what Down, and fair play to Down, what they did that day, they came with a game plan and they stuck with it. And there was all sorts of elements that included in the Donegal performance that fell in their favour. We didn't handle Lauren Murdoch in the middle of the field. We didn't handle Daniel Guinness, who ran through us up the off the middle of the park. Armagh done that last week. Armagh weren't in any way off
Donegal,
the boil.
Yeah. Okay.
They weren't flat. They weren't flat last week.
A lot of Donegal, fans out there feel
if Donegal were anywhere near the level of performance that you know that was in that group.
Yeah.
Even what Down had brought, Donegal probably could have beat them that day.
Donegal fans feel that maybe we're focusing on the Sam Maguire this year.
People's going to have all different ideas of what's going on, and some of them are absolutely crazy. So
I don't think you can set 15 players up to go out there, score, you know, whatever the squad, 2-17 or whatever it is, to lose. I don't see how anyone could be that good. But anyway, and this new format's interesting because we can lose against Kerry, win our next game, go into another pot, get into.
But they'll say, like, we've beaten Kerry twice this year. We won on Kerry, wasn't it, last year in the league? Yes, they have Clifford and they have Shawnee O'Shea. They have some big players, but Kerry are missing what, a good handful of half of that team. That lined out in the All-Ireland final last year. So it's not that, listen, oh, we're going down to Kerry to get beat and we're going to go into round two of the qualifier. Like, some people will suggest that what happened in the league was, again, Donegal came with a game plan. It's back to the Down sort of scenario. And Kerry came, and Kerry were flatter than what they should have been that day. Yes, it's going to be a different Kerry team we're going to meet.
But we're right in the business end of the season.
If the end of the day, if you want to be a contender, And the All-Ireland series, you have to beat big teams along the way. What side of the draw would you like to be in? I would like to be in the top end of the draw too, eh? Like, you go to Kerry, not many people are going to give us a hope after what happened the last day. You go down there and you won in their backyard. That's a big statement of intent in the championship.
I think the best thing,
and what happened 4 or 5 weeks before that in Letterkenny is forgotten about.
I think we've learnt this over the years, actually. What people need to stop thinking is that it's very easy to predict anymore, especially if you've got the top 12 teams.
You can't, and you're right in what you're saying. You can lose in the All-Ireland series. Kerry lost to Meath last year. We lost to Tyrone after winning the Ulster title. So it's not the be-all and end-all if you go to Kerry and you lose, you're in another section of the draw, so you are. And listen, it's very, very intriguing.
It is.
We can't wait for it to start to see how the whole thing's going to unfold and develop. But listen, Jim McGuinness will set his team up accordingly.
We'll see
where we go from there. But the purpose of this conversation was about GAA+. It seems to be it's happening. It's going to be on behind a paywall.
Okay.
And listen, well, if you don't have the paywall, you can...
Donegal, all of Donegal games, all your GAA action here live, free for you on Highland Radio, on the radio. Thank you very much, Josh. It's only a matter of time before the likes of GAA+ becomes the platform. And maybe there's a featured game on RT or something. And you've seen it in other sports as well. And Oisin talked of American football, and that's a very good example. But I think also too in boxing, where you had an app, DAZN, who started competing in that market. And everyone says, no one's going to watch on a streaming platform. But they've effectively got to the point whereby they're the only ones really showing boxing. I mean, Sky Sports show a bit of Zuffa boxing, and there's some boxing on Paramount Plus in the United States. But the truth be told, if you want to watch boxing, both, you know, regular shows and pay-per-view shows, it is now on a streaming service. And I feel it just feels like GAA Plus, its relationship with RTE feels a little bit like DAZN for me in the boxing world, and its relationship with the other players in boxing. You know, TNT, I'd Sky Sports out, terrestrial channels out, to a great extent, if you understand where I'm coming from. Let me see, where are we? Comments here on that issue that we were discussing with Oisin there. I think that the game being in Kerry for Donegal during the Relay for Life weekend is very unfair and disappointing. When did that happen last? Was that last year or the year before? It's very hard actually sometimes to keep track of time, but I do recall there's been at least one clash between the Donegal game and Relay for Life. But this caller believes it's disappointing and unfair. This is an event that Donegal strongly gets behind, resulting in a lot of people not attending the match. We support local and the Relay for Life. This was a Dublin decision, but everyone in the GEA should speak out against it. It could easily be changed to another weekend. Well, it wouldn't be easily changed because then people would start arguing that one team has an advantage because they've got less recovery time or more recovery time. It's just too big, I'd be honest with you. It's just too big to be adjusted to accommodate Relay for Life, which will be well attended and the game will be a sellout. So I understand where you're coming from, and on paper, you know, you're probably spot on, but again, the game's probably going to be a sellout anyway. Now, TG Cahir are releasing a four-part series based on the Donegal International Rally, and it's being released at 8 p.m. on TG Cahir tonight, Thursday, the 7th of May. I'm joined by its producer Sonia Nigilinesbeg, who is producer of Ligid Le Ruhan. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, and thanks for having us.
All right, okay. So talk to us about the show.
Well, it's a four-part series that delves really into the behind-the-scenes. As you know, in this part of the country, we're there's a lot of car enthusiasts, young, old, and the Donegal International Rally being one of the biggest events that we have throughout the year. I for the BBC, I did a two-part series about 11, 12 years ago, and always wanted to do a series with my own company. And one that I had in mind was just following, you know, the big racers on the day, drivers and co-drivers, Callum Devine, PJ McDermott, but also to show the young fellas who are at home in their garages getting rally cars ready and going to the rally on a you know, without the backing of a big team behind them, you know. So there's a local lad here, Jordan Green McGee, and his background team are his father, his neighbours, his father's friends, and so this is a look behind the rally as to how it's organised, how it runs, what it's like to participate, what the services are like, what scrutiny's like, and we're delighted with it, I have to say.
It sounds to me like it's going to be very appealing to people who already have a love of motorsport or the rally. But also, too, it might be an eye-opener for people who just hear the noise sometimes around the rally, you know, the other activity that really isn't what the rally is about at all. So I think it's gonna have broad appeal across a variety of audiences, Sonia.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first programme, actually, is about the behind-the-scenes. It's about the setting up, you know, Eamon McGee, the clerk of the course, the work that goes in, Suzanne McLafferty, the secretary, and there's no rallying actually in the first program. There's a little bit of, you know, them doing a recce and doing a wee bit of a run into it, but it's really the behind the scenes and the work that actually goes in, and that, as you said, is an important element of the rally, and it's important to show people the hard work. And you have to remember that these people are volunteers, you know, nobody's being paid to do this, you know. So it's a phenomenal event, you know, run by amazing people. And, you know, 99.9% of the people that are at the rally, involved in the rally, are absolutely fabulous. We had an amazing time filming this series. You know, it's As Gaeilge. And it's just, I'm so proud to be able to showcase the rally, the work that goes into the background of it, and the event itself, and the hard work and the cost of this rally. You know, I think people, when they think of the rally, they think of young fellas out doing donuts and, you know, that kind of a thing. But the young fellow we were following, for example, he had to get 4 new tyres during the rally and it cost him £1,000. So it's not something that he can take lightly. And, you know, he works in the tunnels away from home and this is his passion.
Yeah.
And that's why he works so hard, is to be able to afford to go to the rally. So it's like a drive to survive. That's how we're pitching it to. And we've got a second series, so we'll be filming it again this year in the same format that we did last year. So
brilliant stuff. One of the rally drivers featured is Terence Diver, who's been involved in the Donegal International Rally a number of times now, 7, I believe. And you'll also know him, listeners, as owner of Diver's Hyundai in Letterkenny. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us, Terence.
Good morning, Greg, and your listeners.
Right, so what was it like to be part of this?
It's a huge event. To be part of the Donegal Rally is probably a dream for a lot of people, which maybe it never happens, but to be able to do it 7 times, I think it's great to be able to do it for such a large event.
And to be part of this programme, what was that like? Because, I mean, you'd be very locked in. So, you know, I presume you had to give it some consideration as to, you know, whether or not you wanted to this to be part of your experience.
Yes, to be part of it and having, I suppose, being from Fidor myself and having a bit of Gaelic, every time you'd see somebody come with a camera, you have to prep yourself to what I'm going to speak about or talk about, or the difficulties or the challenges of the rally or problems or whatever arising. And it's good. It's good to have that as well, to look back in years to come as well.
And what about sort of this show presenting the real Donegal International Rally, the real experience, the real people? Did that encourage you to get involved?
I was participating in the rally anyway. The fact that I have the Gaelic that Sonia had asked me and others.
I think you're being a bit modest. They didn't just pull you in because of your Irish talents. There's more to you than that. As important as that is, right?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's great to be involved in it. To be part of the filming and all that is great.
Brilliant stuff. And as you say, it's there. It's an archive forever. Well done. And good luck this year. Sonia, so the first episode is on this evening. And you know, the one thing about TG Cahir, not the one thing, one of the great things about it, it has a really good player as well too. So it's lovely if people tune in as part of the scheduled broadcast, but you don't really miss it because it is a player that works really quite well, I've found. So the first episode on tonight anyway, and then in subsequent weeks, or when's the next broadcast dates?
So the first programme's on tonight at 8 o'clock. And just could I say another wee thing, Greg?
Of
it's
course.
Quite a historic series as well, because we came home here to the Donegal Gaelic 5 years ago, and our kind of intention was to try and generate the industry here. And this the rally series for TG Cahir is the first ever series, broadcast series, that has been completed entirely in the Gaeltacht of Donegal. And
that's an amazing personal achievement, Sonia.
It is. It's you know, we're very, very proud of that, because when we came home, we brought people on board, we trained people, and you know, but at the end of every programme, we could do to the offline process, but at the end, there's an online and a dub and subtitles that has to be done. And the online and the dub, we had to go to Galway. We had to travel 5 hours. And the last time I did a dub, I had to go to Scotland. I had to send it over to Scotland.
It's getting closer.
To get it done. And a young cousin of mine, Cathal McGillaspig, moved home there last year. And he has set up a studio here in Gidor. And that was the final piece of the puzzle, because we got funding from Udras na Gaeltacht's leader scheme, and we got equipment ourselves to do the online process and delivery to TG Cahir. And for us, you know, part and parcel with this amazing series is that achievement. And it's the first stepping stone to generating an industry here that's homegrown, and that we can show people that we can make TV programmes from beginning to end here in the northwest of Donegal as well.
All right, listen, thank you so very much for joining us. Congratulations and every success. Sonia Nigel Asbug, thank you so much indeed. That show is on tonight at 8 p.m. TG Cahir. So if you like the rally, if you like the scenery, if you like the people, it's all there for you. I think it's going to be really popular, actually, not just locally, but I think it's going to have. People love sports documentaries. They really do. One of the biggest, most successful elements of documentary making is when they're focused on sport, and secondly, crime. And then after that, it's you can after that, you can work it out yourself. I hope you all take a really big interest in the situation this Donegal family is going through. Aaron Langan is from the south of the county around Lahey. Very brave young lad. He's lived with DMD, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, since his diagnosis when he was 1.5 years old. Now, DMD causes his muscles to deteriorate, but there is a drug out there that has received European approval. The HSE, though, is still dilly-dallying on whether or not the drug can be used here. It's a very time-sensitive drug, and I'm going to be joined by Aaron's parents shortly, and if I've got anything wrong here, they can correct me. But it's time-sensitive in that the person who receives this givinostat drug, I'll get correction on that pronunciation if need be, the sooner they get it, the better the outcome. And not only that, you have to have a certain level of mobility before you can receive the drug and for it to have an effect. Now, Aaron's condition is deteriorating. It is that type of a condition. So the clock isn't stopped. You know, we often talk about the health service and timely intervention. Sometimes there is a window whereby, you know, people can wait. This is one of those situations that time is very, very pressing. And I really, really hope, because I know when you go out on vote at election time and you vote for your TDs and whomever you support and you send them to Dáil Éireann to represent you, I really hope one of them, if they haven't already, picks this up and gets it back on the agenda in the Dáil Éireann game, because this is quite literally children's lives, Donegal's children's life. And if you have a platform in Dáil Éireann and you don't use it for something like this, well, what function has it really in any way, shape or form? Sinead Langan is Aaron's mum and joins him now. Hi, Sinead.
Hi, good morning, Craig. Thank you for having us on this morning.
Right, so is there anything you want to add or correct in terms of the outline of that for our listeners and Aaron's situation, Sinead?
No, I think you've said it all there. We went to Leinster House on the 11th of June last year. It was full with TDs and parents of kids with Duchenne. And everybody was on for pushing this. And when we are grateful how far this has come, but it's treated like any other medicine in the timeline now. But unfortunately, Duchenne cannot wait. The reality is the system is just far too slow for Duchenne, because kids with Duchenne deteriorate every day, and over the last few months Aaron has deteriorated rapidly, and it's just devastating to watch. We've watched clinical trials, you know, since Aaron was about 18 months, and this is the first time that something is just within our reach but just so out of reach for us. And it is just so heartbreaking.
So, you know, last year, the European Medicines Agency cleared the use of the drug, which is very significant because it has to jump through so many hurdles. The delay here now is the HSC reviewing if the drug can be used here. And is it around about 150 children that have Duchenne, Sinead?
Yeah, there's around approximately 150. In Ireland at the minute.
What impact, if all went well, would this drug have on Aaron? You know, does it stem or slow down the situation? Well, can there be some recovery? What do we know about how effective the drug can be?
Well, givinostat is it stops the inflammation in the muscles. So it makes them obviously keep their mobility for longer. But unfortunately, Aaron has moved full-time now to a wheelchair since March. But we're hoping that the ambulance, which the EMA use, that they have to be ambulant, that Ireland is going to take it that, you know, that they can stand or that they can transfer, you know, and have some wee bit of dignity and independence that, you know, for it's a big thing that, you know, that he can actually stand up with his chair, that we can transfer him to another chair or use the bathroom or whatever. Like, you know, we know it's not going to make him walk again, or it's not going to reverse what damage is done. But it's, you know, it's stop it in the upper body, because it affects every muscle in the body. It's the upper body now that we... you know,
focused
we're
on.
Hoping that it'll slow it down, yeah.
But that's why, you know, ironically, or not ironically, but indicatively, Aaron's situation when the protests were taking place in the Dáil a short 8 months ago was very, very different. Since then, there's been further deterioration, and now he's being, now I have to use a chair. How is he, in these situations often... The young ones are the most brave of all of us, Sinead. But there's no, you shouldn't have to be. It's such a horrible situation. How is Aaron coping with it all?
He has good days and bad days. You know, it's night time that he takes up a lot of questions, and he hates that he can't walk, and he hates that he can't do this and that other kids can do. And it's just very hard to listen to that, because you have no... real answers for him, only, you know, to support him and understand his feelings and emotions. He gets very frustrated and takes it out then on us as a family and that, you know. So it's the emotional side and the psychological side that people don't see either. They just see the physical side of things, but the bigger effect, you know, we have more medical equipment in the house. It's just going down rapidly now, to be honest. We just hope that we can get this, that stop it in its tracks.
I mean, like, I don't want to make obvious arguments, but they're talking about a 35 million euro statue in Dublin. And, you know, we've seen massive increases in spend in the HSE, and it's been on wages. There has to be some capacity within that organisation for Jennifer Carr McNeil to take a personal interest or whatever it might be, and even look at the children that could benefit from this and try and fast track or make exceptions or find some pathway for the likes of Aaron to get onto this drug whilst it actually still is of benefit to him. And we, as a society, as a people, we have to surely be able to find a way to make that happen.
Absolutely. You know, it's just so frustrating that you can just see these people sitting around a table thinking, well, you know, would that be value for money there? Would that child's life there now? Should we let him, his mobility deteriorate more, or should we halt it just for a couple of years that, you know, he can have just a wee bit more independence and be a bit happier and a bit, you know, more quality of life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is what's so frustrating, and the amount of money that is just wasted is just, we're really disappointed, you know, and really frustrated. And that on this island that there's kids in Northern Ireland receiving this drug, UK, Europe, US, you know, and it's just so frustrating. And that we're sitting here since last June waiting on this, you know. Yeah, everything takes time, you know, maybe a couple of months or whatever, but this, they knew the urgency of Duchenne, and we are grateful, but obviously this has been fast-tracked, and I believe they're waiting on the company to come back with a price for negotiations. But
so do you believe the HSE then is actively, do you believe the HSE actively is trying to get this drug to Irish patients then at this time?
Not enough, no, not enough, being honest. I think just Duchenne is just not your regular, you know, your regular candidate, like, for, you know, for this, but I just think they need to sit down and look at these, for these rare conditions, you know, in kids or adults or whatever, and just mechanisms sometimes, you know.
And that meeting you were talking about would be like a cost-benefit analysis, you know, which is horrendous to think that our people are being sort of... Dermot's beside you. Can I have a quick word with him, Sinead, if you don't mind?
Hey, Craig, how are you?
Hey, Dermot. I'm sure you're sharing...
How are you doing, Craig?
I'm doing great, Dermot, and thanks for speaking to us. I'm sure, you know, you and Sinead share this frustration. I know how this feels from speaking to other people, this sort of inherent thing in us as in parents to do everything we can for our children, but you can't do everything you can because of this stupid situation where this drug is available so broadly, but not for your son.
Yeah, like, so frustrating. Like, we're 10 minutes from the border, and it's available in Northern Ireland and England and Scotland. You know, we can't even go over there and get it. Why a cross-border thing couldn't have been looked at? Like, it's just so frustrating. I think it came in Scotland, they had it rolled out in 6 weeks. We're 10 months down the line from where they're meeting, and our child has deteriorated so much. You know, I don't think people realise that the slogan, time is muscle, they don't get that. You know, we have not got time on our side.
And also, we have a number too. It could cost anything per child, or in Aaron's case, between 92,000 and 348,000. You know, give us the bill. I'm sure we as a county can fundraise this. You know what I mean? We know the number. We know in terms of medical interventions, it's actually probably at the lower scale, particularly with rare conditions.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't pay it, help. And when I say you, I mean the state, the HSC. Well, tell us how we can sort it out. Do you know what I mean? That's how important this is. It's really frustrating.
We have looked into, like, asking our doctors, can we buy it somewhere else? Can we go somewhere else to get it? And you cannot get it.
No.
And, like, we shouldn't have to. Families don't have the energy to do that, Craig.
Mm.
You know, we, like, the HSC, that's what they're there for. They should be providing this medicine. Like, are we not all members of the EU? And they have passed it. Why are we going through all this 10 months to go through fighting over, coming down to this over money at the end of it? Like, who puts a value on our child's well-being, their quality of life? And that's what's so frustrating. The amount of money is wasted in this country, you know, and then you're putting a child's life down to money. You know, it's so frustrating for us to live with that.
And
we don't have time.
It's a child, but it's a family. It's an entire family.
It would be a
gift, you know, a gift of a standard of life, time. Who knows where science might go
better
in the future.
Quality of life.
Yeah, and he deserves it.
Sinead says there, we've been looking at clinical trials since Aaron was a year and a half when he was diagnosed, and we've been let, you know, you're following them to the last stages and they're turned down. This is the only one that's passed in Europe. And, like, we're waiting 8 years, like, and now when it's there, our government are taking 10 months and we're still not over the line to get it. It's just giving you a gift and it's just taking it away in the other hand, and it's just not good enough.
Yeah, it's hope is actually almost crueler. And that's what we were given hope.
Yeah.
Right, again, I mean, I'll throw the gauntlet down to our elected representatives here. You know, this, we don't have time. Aaron doesn't have time. Sinead doesn't have time. Dermot doesn't have time. The wheels seem to be in motion, but they've clogged somewhere. This needs to be gotten over the line, or there has to be some mechanism found to get this treatment to our kids, our children. Sinead and Dermot... unless there's anything else that you wish to add,
Just on that, Craig. Like a lot of other countries have early interventions for these drugs.
Mm.
You know, why we can't have it in place? Like, we have no system to take these drugs in faster for conditions like Duchenne. The time is so critical. You know, every other country or a lot of other countries have this method where they can just fast track the drugs, and we're sitting here. We've asked for this in Leinster House way back then, and we were assured that we'd get this over the line as quick as possible. But I don't think, you know, once you get out of Leinster House and it's out of their view and out of their mind,
you know,
politicians are great when you go up there and they'll do everything. But once it's out of the mind, it's yesterday's news to them, and that's it. You know, it's just not good enough.
Yeah, I can understand your frustration. And, you know, it's about giving Aaron a chance. Give him a chance.
That's it, you know, that's all we want. You know, we know it's not a cure. We know it's not a cure, but we just want to give him the best quality of life. You know, the guilt, the fear that you feel every day is just unbelievable. It's just an absolute nightmare. And we're just heartbroken, you know?
Yeah, I know. And also, too, down the line, medical costs. You know, there's so many arguments as to why it's good to spend this money now, because, you know, whatever might be required into the future, it might be far in excess of this. You know, so spend the money now and give give our...
Listen, Craig, the amount of equipment we're getting in the house at the minute, like, nobody sees the expense of that. Like, you know, it's a big expense. Mm. And then things could be probably pushed out a little further. We know this isn't a cure, but it's just about giving them a chance at life. We're just like any other parent. We just want the best for our child, and that's it.
Yeah, we all do. And we just need some people with influence to understand that and put themselves in that situation.
Yeah.
I think if we could get some of the decision makers into some of these situations, we wouldn't have any of these problems, because I can guarantee you now there wouldn't be a minister sitting in this situation, because a solution would be found. And that's no disrespect to them. I understand how things work. Listen, Sinead, Dermot, thanks for joining us. Our love to Aaron and everyone, of course, as well. And, you know, with school friends and all the people at school, my old school it is, in fact, you know, it affects everyone, and they're all there supporting you and doing the best that they can.
It does.
And now we just need... We just need
that, you know... Yeah, we're just so grateful for all the love and support that we get from our family and friends and in the community at school. You know, they just have them ruined at school, and, you know, everybody loves them, and we're just so grateful for all that. And it really does help, and we just want to say thanks to everyone.
All right, Sinead. All right, Dermot. Best of wishes and our love as well to Aaron. And, you know, if you've moved by that story, you wonder, what can you do? Well, you can feel helpless at times, can't you? Why don't you contact your local TD and say, listen, I was listening to this story, this plight of a young Lahey boy. His parents just want time. They want him to have time. They want him to have an improved quality of life. You know, what can you do about this? That would be real power. You know, you talk about power. Can you imagine using that power to try and make their life so much better? Okay, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call either on 07491 25,000. All right, let's say good morning to Dahi McColgan, Green School Coordinator at the Royal and Prior Comprehensive School in beautiful Ruffo. Good morning to you, Dahi.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having us.
Good to have you on your show, or on our show. Abby Craig, is it Craig or Craig? I don't know if this is a typo, Abby. Is it Craig?
It's Craig, C-R-A-I-G.
Which is normally what people call me, strangely. Abby Craig is a TY student leading out on a campaign we're going to talk about in a moment. And Cody McClintock's a 50-year student and has been involved in green school campaigns for 5 years. Good morning to you, Cody.
Morning.
Such 5 years of dedication to this. Why is it important to you, Cody?
It's quite important to me because I come from a farming background myself. So I've seen how much work it takes to put food on plates and feed people. So just helping out even the little bit I can of green schools is very important to me, just to make it easier on those farmers and everyone that's out there working.
Abby, you are involved in the Royal and Prior Comprehensive School in Ruffo, creating awareness of their Safe Cycle Awareness Campaign, which is why we're talking now. Abby, why is this important to you?
It's important to me because I put myself down for this because I'm in TY, so I have the time and flexibility in my schedule. So I love putting myself down for these things. Like, I'm on the student council as well, and I'm personally just love making a difference. And I would love to make a difference in the school for cycling, because I myself would love to cycle at school, but it's just not in my capability with the roads and the infrastructure.
Which is really all part of the situation, isn't it, really? That highlights the deficits. And Dahi, from your perspective, it is great, isn't it, to encourage this understanding in your students, or harness it where it exists already. But this is their country going forward, right? You know what I mean? The future is theirs. So it's great to see young people leading out on this.
Yeah. Absolutely, Greg. I mean, there's a chronic lack of investment in this county and nation, you know, compared to the rest of the country. Our infrastructure is non-existent. We have no motorways, no trains. So, like, cycling infrastructure You know, basically we're in year five of this Green Schools programme and transport is our theme. So we kind of met up together at the start of the year, Greg, to figure out how we could look at transport and make a difference to our school community. And we chose cycling, you know, because of lack of infrastructure, to see if we could encourage more students to cycle to school.
Yeah, and Cody, it's about, I suppose, facilitating those that want to. Not everyone wants to cycle to school. It doesn't suit everyone, but to be able to facilitate them to do so and to do so safely. And then others might see it and say, right, well, maybe I would like to do that as well. You know, that's where we're going. That's what we have to build on, Cody.
Exactly. I feel like if you see your friends cycling, you'd be encouraged to cycle too. You'd be more, maybe a sense of community, because when you're alone, it's never a fun thing to do. And when you're in that 5 kilometre radius that we're hoping to get more people to cycle, and we hope more people be like, oh, I live around that area too, I might as well join them, come to school and that. Because if we do get our 15 people that we wish to get cycling, next year we'll ask the county council if we're able to build a bike rack for people to store their bikes in, so it's easier for them to get to school.
Yeah, and it builds and it builds from there. And Abby, am I correct in saying this is an initiative upcoming to try and encourage not just teachers, but also students to cycle to school where it's safe to do so?
Yeah, definitely. Like, we even have Mr. McColgan, who's going to be cycling to school tomorrow, and that is a 42-kilometre distance, just to prove.
Okay.
Yeah, just to prove to our school, not just as Eagle, but to prove to our school that we are, if he's able to do that, that students that are in a 5 kilometre radius should be able to do that, because within 5 kilometres, it's a safe enough distance, and you're in with enough facilities, and it's also a far enough to be able to make it manageable and stop the pollution, and it's just good exercise as well. It's good for your mind. I would love to do it if I could.
Yeah, I remember when I was much, much younger in rural South Donegal, like, our bikes were our independence, our freedom. That's what they were, and it wasn't just going to and from school. It was going, whether you were going fishing or going doing whatever you do, you got on your bike and it felt like you had your own car almost. It was, I'm not sure if that's quite the case now. And also, Dahi, coming up, there is a final in Dublin, and this project is a finalist in that.
Yeah. So we made an application at the start of the year for it, Greg, you know, and highlighted what we would like to do, how we would like to promote it within our community, our targets. One of our targets was to get 15 students to cycle. You know, we based that on the fact that about 68% of our students come to school on a bus. If they're not busing, 24% come in a car, but only less than 2% of students surveyed actually cycled. Now, we have about 15% of students that have walked to school. So that's our target group. So we're hoping that those that are in a walking distance of school might consider cycling.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. And part of this as well, which I haven't touched on, is that information that you've just heard Dahi reference was off the back of a survey, which in and of itself is a great piece of work. And Cody, too, a number of short-term findings came from that survey too. So it's not just about trying to get people on the bike. It's recognising there is stuff that needs to be done to facilitate that. So in the short term, what kind of stuff are we looking at?
We're looking at some more like encouragement and like through the use of school and encouraging and looking at who's living in within the distance.
Yeah, so the council, for an example, cycle lanes within 5K of the school, speed zones, recognising the shared space, ramps. We'd love to see quite a lot of ramps in different places. So all real practical stuff that you've come up with. Listen, thank you so very much. Congratulations and well done. Abby, that's your year off now. You can focus fully on your
Thank you.
I'm only joking. I know it's far from a year off and you've done some important work, not least on this project. Cody, keep up the great work and your interest in all of that. It sounds fantastic. And Dahi, obviously, you know, they have your encouragement and your backing in all of this as well. So well done to you. We appreciate it. Best of luck, by the way, with the initiative and in Dublin next Tuesday.
Thank you, Greg. And we're hoping your listeners might just actually vote for us too. We've shared the link with your producer.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes. Well,
that'd be fantastic if you could give us a wee vote.
We will certainly work on that. Thank you so much, guys. Dahi McColgan, Green School Coordinator at the Royal and Prior Comprehensive School, FOA. Abby Craig, there, a TY student. Cody McClintock as well. Three great guests.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Print Supplies Frosses. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Print Supplies, your local printer and photocopier company.
It's all under the texts that have been coming in fast and furious. We've got stuff on pool beds, which I've never heard them reference to, cycling, and lots of other stuff, which I won't get to today, but I will carry into tomorrow's show. Chris Ashmore writes, free two-hour HR sessions in May. HR, very important part of business.
Indeed. Now, Inisho and Innovation, based there in Buncrana, they've two events coming up. They're both free. There's an in-person workshop next Wednesday. The theme is performance management, driving success in the workplace. So if you go along there, you can get... some information all about this. It's a practical hands-on workshop, helps you address things like underperformance in your business, improving team productivity, and also making sure you're adhering to compliant processes. That's one of them. They also have a live webinar on Wednesday, the 20th of May. Now, this is an interesting one. As we come into the summer season, things are going to cover are things like smarter ways to track and manage employee leave. The challenges that, of course, you can be left with if people are going away on holidays, filling the gap. So strategies to minimise disruption and maintain productivity. So Inisho and Innovation, that's who you want to contact if you want to follow that up.
Yeah, bit of recognition for Tata Consultancy Services, a huge employer here in Donegal.
Indeed. Now, Tata, they employ over 900 people here at the Global Delivery Centre in Letterkenny. They've won the Diversity, Inclusion and Workplace Culture Award at the Invest in Ireland Awards for this year. So this is in recognition of the diverse workforce that they have. So it's another feather in the cap for them. Big, big employer. And just, you know, to give it a scale of things, people may be familiar with their premises here in Letterkenny. They are actually located in 46 countries around the world with more than 600,000 staff. So it's mind-boggling.
Big operation. Do you want me to jump forward to the podcast and then we can go back? Right, what have you been talking about this week?
Been looking at a West Donegal business that's celebrating its 35th anniversary, Donegal Shores Hygiene and Catering Supplies. They provide all sorts of catering equipment, everything from fridges to freezers, ovens, water boilers, very much for the hospitality sector. And indeed, they've over 10,000 lines of products as well. So everything from toilet rolls to washing up liquids. Paddy McGowan is operations manager with the company, and he came into studio to talk to me about the company and its continued success.
Yeah, Claddy Doon and All was founded in 1990. Declan and Marie Kelly from Gidore, seen a gap in the market for hygiene and catering products. We're just not a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday. It's a 24/7, you know, and from being involved in the company myself, you know, you do get the calls, and like that's where the word service comes into it. If you pull out the stops on a Saturday or a Sunday where somebody has an oversight during the week that they didn't think they needed something, or there's a breakdown, or there's a piece of equipment that's not running properly, you know, our guys are there on hand to provide that service again, like to keep that show running for that company. Company's in a good place, and like going back to that staff and a lot of people there for a long number of years and been loyal to the company. And again, we're very, very grateful for that because like they all have a vital part to play.
Yeah, a huge company of huge scale and a great reputation amongst its client base too, no doubt.
Absolutely. They employ 19 people now, and from small beginnings, they spotted a gap in the market. So a big player in that sector, as well as the hospitality, they also deal with schools, colleges, nursing homes, food production factories. A bit of a one-stop shop if you're in catering, hygiene, that whole sector.
Right. Now, electricity generation breakdown. You look at these figures and then bring them to us as well. Of course, this is off the back of us finding out we have the highest electricity charges in Europe, 40% above the European average. But how are we creating electricity?
Yeah, well, some interesting things that have emerged from the month of April. For the third month in a row, renewable generation exceeded that of fossil fuels. So that trend is continuing, and renewable generation equivalent to about 46% of electricity demand. Now, we do import a lot of electricity, mm-hmm. so And this is interesting because of the shortage of supplies. About 14% of our electricity was actually imported. So we have that deficit in terms of generating capacity. And we are going to see, of course, more wind farms coming online and a big increase in the solar side of things. We are.
You say that as if it's... When?
Well, over time.
This is like about the 75,000 electric chargers that get announced for Donegal every year. Where the blooming hell are they? Anyway, listen, Chris, interesting nonetheless. It's not your fault. You're just a government mouthpiece. Don't forget you can listen to the podcast, the Business Matters podcast on our website. It's live for you today and it's broadcast for you on the radio after 6 o'clock on Sunday. And Chris, if anyone wants to contact you and berate you for being a PR man for the government, how do they do that?
Business Matters at HighlandRadio.com.
I'm only being bad
at you. He's in great form.
I'm only doing this because I had to sit through Arsenal defending a one goal lead for God knows how many minutes. And, you know, if I have to suffer, you should have to suffer too. So that's the only reason I was being a bit nasty. Sorry about that.
Times are good.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day, everyone.